This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The military offers young men and women job training, money for college, an opportunity to serve the country. But for the moment, at least, it's a hard sell. Both the Army and the Marines failed to meet their recruitment goals for March and April. In February, the Army released figures showing the active duty Army was 27% below its goal of 7,050 new recruits for that month. The Navy and the Air Force, which are less engaged in Afghanistan and Iraq, are on target. That suggests that filling the front ranks in the midst of a controversial war is becoming more difficult. Even with increased financial incentives, signing bonuses now range between $10,000 and $15,000, and lowered entrance standards, a high school diploma is not always required, recruiters are finding stiff resistance from young people and from their parents. Later in the program, writer and broadcaster Sarah Vowell joins us to talk about her new book, Assassination Vacation. But first, recruiting in time of war. If you're a young person who's thinking about signing up or one who's decided, either way, give us a call. We'd also like to hear from the parents of military-aged children. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Marketing research indicates that parents can make or break a recruit's decision. The Army knows all about that and recently launched a series of new recruitment commercials aimed at parents. Joining us now from the Pentagon in Northern Virginia to talk more about this strategy is Army Public Affairs Specialist Paul Boyce. And thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mr. Conan. A pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
How important are parents in the decision of a potential recruit?
Sir, as you can imagine, for a potential recruit between the ages of 18 and 25, where an individual is thinking about their first career choice at an early start in their life, a parent, a mother, a father, a grandparent, a high school coach, these are very important people. In fact, we call them influencers. They are so important in influencing critical decisions that young people make early in their lives.
Has the Army done research on this point?
Oh, yes, sir. In fact, we have focus groups on these sorts of issues on a regular basis. We speak with aspiring recruits as well as with their parents, and we know from the research that we've done that parents want to know as many details as possible about what it means to serve in the Army today, and, of course, issues dealing with everything from career choices to safety of their son or daughter. It's very important to them, and it's very important to the Army. We've gone so far as to even include on our www.goarmy.com website a special webpage to answer questions that parents may have.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is true, you say, even though young men and women between 18 and 24 you're talking about, they don't need their parents' permission.
They do not, but as you can imagine, it's very important when you are making a major decision early in your life, be it a career choice, purchasing an automobile or a house or an apartment or some other expense, that they wish to get information from people who mean so much in their lives and to seek their knowledge and guidance before making an important decision. And we encourage that as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it takes time to explain all those things. There's obviously a lot of technicalities involved in signing up. One issue, though, the public opinion survey suggests that parents are very worried about the violence in Iraq. What can the Army do to counter that?
Well, obviously, we've in fact got soldier recruiters on the trail today in cities like New York and San Antonio, actual soldiers who have just returned from the front lines in Afghanistan and Iraq to sit down with the parents and talk with them about their personal experiences, what they saw and what they went through and how they succeeded in both countries and around the world. As you know, the U.S. Army is in more than just Iraq and Afghanistan. As you pointed out to your listeners, mm-hmm. We're actually in more than 130 countries on any given day.
We have a couple of ads from your new campaign, TV ads. We're going to hear the audio of this first one.
I think I figured out what I want to do with my life.
Yeah, that is?
Help people and be incredibly successful.
Okay.
If I gave 100 people a shot at a decent life, mm-hmm. then they'd be successful. And that makes me successful.
Sounds like a nice plan. Someone's hiring for that?
And then the graphic comes up, a young woman talking with her, apparently with her father. What's the message for parents there?
Yes, sir. The message behind this ad is very much what you told your listeners in the setup for today's program, which is that young people tell us in focus groups, I want to be acknowledged for what I'm doing in my career. I also want to be something larger than myself, a strong link in a strong chain. And we believe that you could not ask for a better opportunity than the U.S. Army to serve your nation, to also do what's right for you and your family. Remember, in many cases, these young recruits are also already married. So this is an important decision, not only for them and with their parents, but also their entire family.
Mm-hmm. But this is a very different approach from the older peacetime approach of, you know, this is a job and you can get great training and benefits and go on to college.
Well, we're still doing the, as you refer to it, the older approach as well, as you can imagine. In fact, bonuses range up to a maximum of $20,000 now. But at the same time, though, we found last year with the first series of ads similar to this that we ran in February, as well as this year, that we need to make certain that in a time of a global war on terrorism, that we also address some of the concerns that are associated with the safety of young men and women serving in the Army or in the armed forces today. So that's why we take the time to point out in these ads and in the website, GoArmy.com, exactly what is the situation today and what a young person can expect.
Let's listen to another ad.
Dad, it's the Army Reserve.
It's the Army.
No. I can still go to college.
It's the Army.
I'm going to be part of something that's important. And it's the Reserve, so they'll train me around here until they need me.
Good training?
It's the Army.
This is a somewhat different strategy.
Well, the strategy, as you can imagine, has been through the years to emphasize back to the time some 30 years ago when the all-volunteer armed forces first started with great success over the past three decades, the importance that young people place on education, be it college education, be it military training education. And in both, as you can imagine, we offer money for college, we offer opportunities to learn leadership, organizational skills that are so important, be it for a short-term career or a lifetime career with us, the U.S. Army.
As the Army falls short of its recruiting goals, there have been some stories, including one in the New York Times, about the difficulties that recruiters themselves are facing, terrible problems meeting what they see as their mission because of, I think the article quoted one man who said, I would rather be in Iraq getting shot at than face the ridicule and anger of some of these parents that I talk to.
Well, obviously, in the a world where we are getting a great deal of information about both the good and, unfortunately, the bad that's associated on a day-to-day basis with achieving a long-term goal such as peace and stability on a national level, you do have people that are very much concerned about this. They want to know more about it. They want to talk with the recruiter about this with a great deal of sincerity. And, yes, this is a time where our recruiting force is rising to a number of challenges. We also know that this is a time historically where as the colleges and high schools of America graduate during the May and June period, that this also is a great supply of new people who are very much interested in a potential career, be it with the Army or another armed services or with a corporate counterpart to us. So we are very much we've taken a great deal of comfort in the fact that because of the nature of what we do today and how we are literally serving and protecting the world, that the Army is an excellent opportunity for personal transformation, for leadership, for education, for benefits for their family, for young people to consider.
Mm-hmm. I apologize to some of our callers. We've been having some telephone problems. We're, I think, sorting them out, so they should be done shortly. And again, our apologies. Here's those an email we got from Ann Kent in Independence, Missouri. My 17-year-old son, a junior in high school, has been inundated by recruiters at his high school as well as through the mail. While he's seriously contemplating the military as a career, I am extremely opposed to it because I do not want to lose my son fighting in an unethical and unjustified war in Iraq. As long as the current administration is in power, I will fight him on this with everything I have. Of course, 17-year-olds do need their parents' permission. In general, though, is that representative of some of the resistance that you're trying to counter with some of these ads?
Well, obviously, our young men and women who serve today in the armed forces don't have the luxury of questioning the decisions of our government. But it is the government's policy that we will help in this particular situation to help this nation to get back on its feet. So while we obviously talk with the parents sincerely about that, we also talk with the parents about what it means to serve in the Army today, the opportunities that are available for a young man or a young woman, the many career fields that are available, the bonuses for considering the U.S. Army, the college education that's available. So you must obviously sit down with a parent concerned or very much propensed to the idea and let them know, if they in fact want to know more about it on behalf of their child, what to expect. And as you can imagine with anything, half of coming to understand something is the research and the talking with others. And that's why we're trying to reach parents today, so that they too feel like they're part of the process, because they are. And it's very important that they also share in any decision that a young person in their family makes. And we encourage them to do so. In our society today, as you know, there are fewer and fewer people who have had the opportunity to serve in the armed forces as grandparents pass away, to include, as you know, this weekend when we honored the Victory in Europe events on their 60th anniversary. So we encourage veterans, we encourage officials, clergy, coaches of high school teams, and parents to all share in the experience and help in advising young people when they consider an important career, to include one with the U.S. Armed Forces and the U.S. Army.
Paul Boyce, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. And my best to you and your listeners, and I hope we get the phone situation back.
I think we fixed it, so when we come back from a break, we're going to be able to hear from people. Paul Boyce is a public affairs specialist with the U.S. Army, and he spoke to us from the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia. When we come back from the break, we'll be speaking with Charles Moskos, a sociologist of the military, the author of The Postmodern Military: Armed Forces After the Cold War, and yes, we will be able to take your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the decline in recruiting numbers reported by the U.S. Army and Marines. With wars ongoing in Iraq and Afghanistan, other obligations around the globe, the military is having a hard time filling the ranks. Of course, you're invited to join the conversation. If you've done recruiting for the military, what does the Army and the Marines need to do differently? If you've been recruited, what made up your mind? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And let's talk with Kimberly. Kimberly's calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm going to be enrolling in the Navy come December of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the Navy because I have, currently an uncle who is in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And he said for me to go into the Navy or the Air Force because of the treatment of women is a lot better there.
And that influenced your decision. But it sounds like you were inclined for a military career anyway.
Not necessarily, but it's just that the job market is so bad in Michigan. It's you're kind of more guaranteed a career in decent pay-wise to mm-hmm. be able to help out the family.
And obviously, you talked to your uncle. Anybody else?
My grandfather was actually in Pearl Harbor, and he was in the Navy.
So obviously a family with a military background.
Yes.
Well, Kimberly, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Joining us now from our studio at NPR West in Culver City, California, is military sociologist Charles Moskos. He's the author of The Postmodern Military: Armed Forces After the Cold War. He's also a professor at Northwestern University. Nice to have you back on the program, Charlie.
Thank you, Neil.
I was curious. You just heard what Paul Boyce said about the Army's new marketing strategy directed towards influencers, parents, uncles, and high school coaches. Do you think this is going to work?
I'm skeptical. I thought one of the interesting lines in one of the advertising things that you played there was where a young lady said, "I want to get a shot at a decent life." I wonder how that got into an advertising slogan using the word shot. But the major problem that faces Army recruiting, even before the war in Iraq, is that we don't have privileged youth serving. I speak, as by the way, as a former draftee who served contemporaneously with Elvis Presley, probably the most famous draftee of all time. But when you have fewer than a dozen members of Congress having children in the armed forces, it's a scandal. And I was addressing a group of recruiters this past fall, and I said, "Would you prefer to have your advertising budget tripled or have Jenna Bush join the Army?" And they unanimously chose the Jenna option. That's the only way that we're going to get through, especially during a time of conflict and war. You have to have the children of the elite serving as well as the children of the working class. One other point here, too. It's interesting that the two most famous names that come out of the Iraq War so far have been Jessica Lynch and Lindy England, mm-hmm. both, you know, working class young women from Appalachia. You're not seeing the Ivy League. You're not seeing Northwestern students. I have done some studies on college campuses to how one could recruit college graduates, which is not the market that the military is aiming for right now. And I think that's the direction that we have to go into.
They're not aiming for college graduates. They're going for high schoolers.
They're going for high schoolers. And by the way, if you're talking about the influence of parents, of course, that's very, very pronounced. But if you're talking about college graduates, that influence is going to be less so. I surveyed students at UCLA, a major state university, at the University of Illinois at Chicago, more of a working class university, and my own university at Northwestern, a selective private university. And the results were similar across the board. These students were interested in educational benefits and a short-term enlistment. The military is always trying to get career soldiers. These people are not going to be career soldiers. We now graduate 1.2 million bachelor degree students every year. If you could get 5% of those to join the military, our recruiting woes would be over. Mm. And a third of those say they intend to go to graduate school. Which makes that interesting is that there are more people going on to graduate school today than in the post-World War II generation that went on to college. I might add, too, and there's an interesting historical footnote here, that starting in late 1943 in World War II, you could no longer volunteer for the military. You could only enter as a draftee. This was because too many of the greatest generation were trying to join the Navy or the Army Air Corps, like today they're joining the Navy or the Air Force, in order to stay out of the ground combat arms. That seems to be pretty much of a perennial concern.
Let's get another caller on the line, and Dave is calling. Dave's with us from Oakland, California.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I just had a quick question. I don't have any personal experience or I haven't done extensive research, but I was just curious why it seems on the surface to be more prevalent that recruiting occurs in neighborhoods that tend to have less income. In other words, you don't see tons of recruiting done out of Beverly Hills, but in other smaller communities, like inner cities and places where there are lower incomes, you don't really see this predominant resource allocation toward recruiting there.
Yeah, Oakland as opposed to maybe Berkeley, I guess is what you're saying, Dave.
Say that.
Is that accurate, Charles Moskos?
Yes, that's accurate because, again, you have essentially what is a marketplace influence recruiting strategy rather than trying to get a true cross-section and getting our elite youth into the children of our elite youth into the military. No country, by the way, will accept casualties on a long term unless the children of the privileged classes are also putting their lives on the line, which is not happening here in Iraq. It's interesting that, you know, in terms of killed in action, we've lost about 1,100 in Iraq by historical standards. Not a large number, of course, still very, very tragic. Yet the support for the war has dropped precipitously because we do not have the children of Congress. We don't have the children of the Fortune 400. We don't have the college graduates serving in the military. I think this is the real problem.
Especially, one would think, Charles, if the emphasis is on this new patriotism and leadership, which they seem to be stressing in these ads.
You know, what we have in America now is patriotism light. People talk it, but they're not willing to do it. They're not even willing to cut back on buying, gas-guzzling vehicles, much less having their children serve in the military.
I think the people at GM may disagree with you on that last point, but go ahead.
But there is an appeal, and it has to be said, try something different in your life, that you will meet a cross-section of Americans that you'll never run into again from different races, ethnic groups, regions, class backgrounds. That's what makes the military experience a memorable one. If you ask by the way, the survey data is very interesting, too, that the average draftee is more pro-military than is the average volunteer veteran. Draftees, by the way, had a lower desertion rate in both World War II, the war in Korea, and the war in Vietnam than did volunteers. And because they tended to represent more of a middle-class background. And that's the kind of soldier we have to get in there.
Dave, thanks very much for the call.
Oh, thank you.
Let's talk now with Dan. Dan's with us from Niles, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a high school teacher, and I've got a group of students who have been involved with some counter-recruitment measures. And what got us, one of the things that got us fired up is the requirements of the No Child Left Behind Act. And I think a lot of parents aren't aware of that, but there's a provision in the No Child Left Behind Act that says that all schools have to provide information to the armed services of all their 18-year-old students' names and addresses. And so
it's a federal program, federal money, so the federal government has strings attached.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you talk about counter-recruitment, what are you talking about, Dan?
It's a kind of a growing movement, I think, in a lot of schools now. We're just trying to inform the students that may be interested in the military of some of the other side of the story that you don't get from the recruiters. And there's a GI network out there, and they tell you how many people really receive the money that they promise you.
The bonus money, you mean?
Yes, the bonus money, and it's a pretty small percentage that receive especially the full amount that they say.
Mm-hmm. Up to $20,000, as Paul Boyce was telling us earlier. Charles Moskos, this is an aspect of resistance I'd not heard about before, but is this coming more common?
It's becoming more common, of course, and the pressure on the recruiters is really very severe. Recruiters are the only group in the military who basically deal with civilians. And, of course, if they're getting hostile reactions on high school campuses as well as college campuses, 32 recruiters have gone absent without leave in recent months. These are not recruits, but recruiters. So you can imagine the pressure on them is really very severe. I think I look back upon my own 2 years in the military as one of the most positive experiences in my life. And I think that's the kind of person you should get is a veteran who was just a short-term citizen soldier to do part-time recruiting, because most people are not going to be making the military career. Those who do should get properly compensated for. And those are the ones for whom benefits like health care and housing allowances should be focused on. It should be for the career force, not for the junior enlisted force who are being lured in with these enlistment bonuses.
Dan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Pam, and Pam's calling from Chicago.
Hi. Well, yeah, my son is an Army recruiter, and he works 60 to 70 hours a week. In a month where he doesn't make his mission, there is a lot of just verbal abuse that takes place from his superiors, but if he's not getting abuse from that end, he's getting it from the parents of the people he's going out and trying to talk to. And, I think he'd rather be in Iraq than having to deal with the treatment that he receives as an Army recruiter. And I have to say, no parent wants their son or daughter in harm's way. But I would rather have him in Iraq, where he is doing something good and feeling proud of what he's doing, than the way he's treated as a recruiter today. It just breaks my heart that the lack of patriotism and the abuse that he takes from both sides, it's just really hard.
Charlie Moskos, recruiters often don't live on bases. They live out where they're doing the recruiting. It's isolated. It's very difficult work.
Well, it's isolated from the military, but it's very integrated, yes, with the civilian life, and that's what makes the pressure. Your previous speaker, speaking about her son, said, this is becoming more and more common, the tremendous pressure. Just imagine somebody saying, and many recruiters are now saying this, they would prefer to be in Iraq rather than getting the kind of treatment they are now receiving from counter-recruiters and their like.
Hmm. Pam, thanks very much for the call. Obviously, you feel very strongly about this. Good luck to you and to your son.
Thank you much.
Pam was calling to us from Chicago. We're talking today about military strategies for reversing the decline in recruitment, particularly to the Army and to the Marines, those two branches of the armed services, of course, bearing the brunt of the conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq. Our guest is Charles Moskos. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Sheila's with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess I was going to relate an experience that I had with my son, who was recruited out of high school by the Marines. And the Marine recruiter called him, was very persistent in calling him at home, making promises to him that he would never carry a weapon, never be sent to Iraq, that he would be only in the Marine Corps band because my son played a musical instrument in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally, you know, I am of the Vietnam era, and I'm not a supporter of the war in Iraq. And I finally had to get on the phone with the recruiter and tell him to leave my son alone, that he would not be allowed. I would not allow him to go into the Marines, and that he was misleading him and promising him, college education funds, et cetera, and that he could not possibly promise that he would not be fighting.
Mm-hmm. Your son was 17 or below 18 years old? Yeah,
he was 17 years old.
Well, Charlie Moskos, we hear a lot about these promises made by recruiters that are not kept. Is this a problem?
Well, it's going to be it was a minor problem. Of course, there's always going to be any system, civilian, military, is going to have people bending the rules. But it's going to become more of an increased problem because of the difficulties in recruitment that we're hearing about, both from the parents and from the recruiters. You're also going to find, in addition to sort of perhaps misleading people, there'll be a dropping of standards, both officially and unofficially. People with less than a high school diploma will be formally recruited, but at the same time, you're going to see maybe wink, wink, nudge, nudge, just look at certain other problems that somebody might have and not put that on the record anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That a recruiter would tell a potential Marine recruit that he will never have to hold a weapon is, of course, just a scandal.
The first requirement of every Marine is to be a rifleman.
Right.
Sheila, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Some Charlie Moskos have suggested that one way to at least repair the problem of numbers of recruits is to recruit foreigners.
Well, I think that's on the horizon. What's interesting, I'm, of course, a pro-draft person.
Mm-hmm.
I think this country needs a three-tier draft, one for the military, one for Homeland Security, which is also understaffed, and then civilian service in a variety of roles as well. But the likelihood of that coming is not at all. And probably Congressman Rangel and myself aren't the only two Americans who want that.
Congressman Rangel himself, also a former draftee.
Oh, Congressman Rangel makes a very interesting point. He said had he not served in the Korean War as a draftee, he would have been a bum. He was a high school dropout at the time, but then through the Army straightened him out, then he went on to college, law school, and, of course, eventually Congress. So it works both ways. You can upgrade people who come from impoverished backgrounds. At the same time, you need to get privileged youth to serve. But this having a foreign legion, which we're obviously going to call a freedom legion in America, is something that's on the horizon. The other thing that's going to happen, too, is more and more work will be civilian contracted out, which, by the way, affects reenlistments. That here's a special forces soldier who can make 10 times that money in Iraq working for a civilian contractor than he would in serving in the military. The military is just now offering certain special forces reenlistment bonuses of up to $100,000 in order not to have them join private contracting firms. You know, it's also interesting, for example, that West Point today is guarded by civilian contractors, not by soldiers anymore. This would be perfect for a short-term enlistment. I think that's the other option, and one that I'm proposing, is that generous educational benefits coupled with a short enlistment, say, of 15 months, you could get people. I surveyed my students at Northwestern this past fall and said, if I could forgive you your student loans and pay for your tuition to graduate school, would you be willing to be a prison guard at Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo? And 25% said they'd seriously consider it. Not that they would, that number would do it, but that's the way to go.
Charles Moskos, as always, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Charlie Moskos, military sociologist, professor at Northwestern University, and he joined us today from our studios at NPR West in Culver City, California.